Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives Wisconsin chapter. Now, why coffee, you ask? Those of you that have perhaps joined us on a prior podcast know that our goal is for listeners to find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends, and just as comfortable as coffee with friends, as you hear our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. So I'd like to take a moment to introduce or perhaps reintroduce you to our podcast approach. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Communications Officer at a human services company called MyPath. The observers I mentioned are Brian Michalski, Health System Specialist at Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee, and Abraham Dulhoff, Manager of Virtual Care and Patient Access to Care at Mercy Health. They're here to listen and ask more of our guests so that we all get the best out of our time together today. So today, we are continuing a dialogue we started on the topic of resiliency. We've said it before, and I'll say it again. The coronavirus pandemic is a marathon for all of us in healthcare, and resiliency will be key to getting through this together. Our guest today is one of two physicians we are tapping to talk about this topic. Dr. Minhaj Hussain is an infectious disease physician at Aurora Advocate Healthcare. We've had the privilege to speak to Dr. Hussain a bit previously, and I can tell he is truly serving at the front line of this pandemic day in and day out. So before I forget to say it, thank you so much, Dr. Hussain, for your work and for taking time to be with us today. So welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, happy to be here.
So just so we get to know everyone's voices, Dr. Hussain, could you say a few words and we can get to know what your voice sounds like as a contrast with Abraham and Brian?
Sure. My name is Minhaj Hussain. I'm an infectious disease specialist at Advocate Aurora Healthcare. I work primarily at St. Luke's Medical Center, Aurora Metro System. I have been a physician for about 15 years, and I have been working in infectious disease for about 2 to 3 years now. Prior to that, I was in primary care and hospitalist medicine. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you again. Brian?
I am Brian. I'm a health system specialist at the Milwaukee VA. I've been here since 2011, and I'm excited to hear from Dr. Hussain.
And Abraham?
Hello, my name is Abraham Dulhoff. I'm the manager of virtual care and patient access to care, as Janet noted before. Excited to hear what Dr. Hussain has to say on the topic and add what I can.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. So, Dr. Hussain, let's start with a basic question. How do you define resiliency?
Resiliency, in my opinion, is the ability to keep doing what you're doing every single day, despite the obstacles in your path, despite the hurdles, despite the mental and physical barriers, to keep going on every day, to keep getting out of bed every morning. That's resiliency.
So we've all, over the last number of months, had to, whether we liked it or not, work on our resiliency skills. And so could you take us back a little bit, Dr. Hussain, to March 12th, the day the world really started to shut down, and describe to us what was your experience?
Initially, so I had actually done an interview with one of the news channels on March 9th, and we had talked about coronavirus, and things were just evolving at that point of time. It wasn't even declared a pandemic yet, and it hadn't really hit the United States that hard. But it quickly escalated, pretty quickly within the next few days after that. As you mentioned, March 12th is, I believe, the president made an announcement, and there was a lot of panic throughout the country. So we as healthcare providers that day really knew that our lives are going to be very, very different over the next few months or longer. But to be honest, we didn't know what to expect yet. We were kind of, we knew changes are going to happen. We just didn't know what exactly those would entail. We didn't know how our patient care would change. We didn't know how our lives would change just yet. But we knew that we had to be ready for it. And you mentioned resiliency earlier, and we knew that this is where we'd have to really dig deep into our resilient nature. And as it went along, obviously we had more clarity as to the depth of what we're dealing with and the extent of what we're dealing with. But to sum it up in one word, on March 12th, I guess the feeling was mostly uncertainty.
So if the one word was uncertainty, can you talk a little bit, Dr. Hussain, about how you personally dealt with that uncertainty?
So, you know, and I has, so I grew up in LA and I was a big Lakers fan. And 2 months prior to that, Kobe Bryant died, and I was really depressed. And I thought 2020 can't get any worse than this. And then 2 months later, you know, coronavirus said, here, hold my beer. I went from one horrible situation to the next horrible situation. And there was a lot of the, like you said, uncertainty. The way I dealt with it is I just stayed optimistic. I just looked at day by day. I didn't want to get too caught up in things, didn't want to get too ahead of myself. I wanted to see, okay, what are we dealing with now? Let's take this day by day. Let's first figure out the extent of what it is. We have a disease evolving in front of our eyes. If we panic too much and get too far ahead of ourselves, we wouldn't be able to do anything. So I maintain optimism. I try to stay realistic. And I took it one step at a time. What's the first thing we have to figure out? Okay, let's first figure out what changes are we going to make in our hospital settings? Because over the next few weeks, we have a window where things aren't quite as bad in terms of numbers. What changes do we have to make? So we got together as infectious disease doctors, as administrators, as everybody to figure out what changes will we make to deal with the upcoming changes. And so preparedness, I guess, is how we dealt with the uncertainty, by being prepared to deal with whatever will be coming our way.
So along with uncertainty can come fear. So have you seen and experienced fear? And if you have, how have you dealt with it? What form has it taken?
So since March till now, it's been about 6 or so months. The uncertainty is a little bit less because we know more and more about what we're dealing with. We know the extent of it. We know the numbers. We know the global impact at this point. But in the place of uncertainty has now grown fear. Uncertainty is a challenge, whereas fear, it's a relentless gnawing feeling every single day. It's a very basic human instinct. And uncertainty was at a very cerebral level. It was a very at a very medical level. It's a degree of uncertainty like we have in any illness. But fear is at a very visceral level. It's this constant fear that, is this the day that I get infected? Is this the day I have to go into isolation for the next few weeks? Is this the day I bring it home to my family, which is probably my greatest fear? Is it that one patient that I saw that one time that was I exposed? Is it my colleague, the random stop at the grocery store? So uncertainty has been replaced to a good extent by fear.
Dr. Hussain, this is Brian. With that fear, and uncertainty in fearful and uncertain times, I think people gravitate towards experts in whatever the issue is going on. With you as the subject matter expert, as an infectious disease physician, it's nerve-wracking to hear that everybody is fearful and that you are fearful. What, as people came to you as the subject matter expert, how did you address that, them, their fear, while you also being fearful?
What wasn't easy. So my fear is a very, you know, and I'm only opening up about it now, but it's a very, very personal emotion for me. And I don't normally express it to any of my patients because that's not what they want to hear from their doctor. What they want to hear from their doctor is a degree of confidence, is a degree of, is some sort of optimism, which also I have, by the way, which is part of my resiliency, as I mentioned earlier. But the one thing I always assured my patients is that, you know, we're all in this together. Whatever emotions that they may be going through, anxiety, stress, fear, everybody is in it together. So at the same time, while I had my own fear, my fear helped me relate to others, basically. I knew what they were going through. Perhaps mine was at a visceral level, probably greater than theirs, because I know the extent of what I've been seeing every day. So to some extent, they were a little bit insulated from it. So I had to toe that line of giving them a degree of optimism while at the same time not downplaying things, while at the same time using my fear as a way to empathize with theirs. So it wasn't easy, but you know, it takes a good degree of wordplay. It takes a good degree of, you know, I'm not a psychologist by any means, but I would always tell my patients that, you know, we'll get through this together. Believe in the science, you know, and that's your biggest antidote for fear. Believe in science, believe that this too shall pass. We'll get through this together.
Yeah. Well, this is Abraham. It sounds like this whole experience has been maybe on a personal level, on a team level, on a system level, on a country level, and pretty much any perspective that you can take, kind of a roller coaster. How has that been for your team? What has been your perspective watching your teams go through this?
So one of our biggest concerns was how do we continue maintaining good quality of care for patients, you know, because clinics were shutting down temporarily for a few weeks, a couple of months, something. And we were very concerned, like you said, the roller coaster, we were concerned about, are we going to be able to provide good care to our patients? Because just because there's a new player in town doesn't mean all the other illnesses have gone away. So we were very concerned that a lot of patients would miss out on the required care, would miss out on coming to the ER for chest pain out of concern of getting coronavirus, COVID. So that was one of the earlier, very big concerns for us as part of the initial roller coaster as to, okay, how do we deal with the risks that we're dealing with? How do we deal with this new pandemic situation while maintaining care for all our patients that we had been doing. So for that, I think our teams have done a good job of collaborating with each other, with administration, with coming up with strategies, preparedness, as we talked about earlier, to mitigate as the risk to whatever degree we could. Initially, we focused on PPE to keep ourselves mm-hmm. safe, obviously, because we can't do much if we are sick. So we focused on maintaining enough supply of PPE. And then eventually we made mandatory masking for everybody in hospital settings and clinic settings as a means to keep operations going, to keep patients coming so we can see people. And we came up with strategies of cohorting patients on floors and to kind of mitigate the risk onto certain units, preparing our nursing staff. So as you know, it's just a system operation. It's when you're in a protocol, when you're in an algorithmic situation, when you're using your cerebral factors, that's how you mitigate a lot of the fear, and that's how you keep working, moving forward. Because honestly, fear is not an option for us. nor is being unprepared, because that patients are coming to us for hope and to help them. And so we had to come together to do that.
Yeah. I think about the, what COVID has done to, not just the health systems in our perspective, but as a country, it's been this kind of singular event that's kind of thrown us all off balance, and we're trying to come back. And as you're talking, it just made me think about more of the importance of teams in solving this problem. We're not going to be able to do it. As great a doctor as I'm sure you are, I don't think that you'd think for a second that this is a problem you can solve individually. So can you talk maybe about looking at your team? What's the importance of having a resilient team? What has been the value for you as an individual, and maybe the value for our patients too? I don't know what kind of perspective you can bring for that.
Well, so I have my direct team, which I work with, my colleagues, the other physicians I work with. And then I have a larger team, which I work with in the Aurora Advocate system in terms of our administrators and everyone. So, I mean, honestly, team is key. I mean, without like you said, individually, I can't do anything, you know. This is all uncharted territory for me. You know, my 10, 15-year career, I mean, when I started off initially, we did have the swine flu. But it was nothing quite on this magnitude. So our team's collaboration in terms of knowing that we have each other's back, knowing that if one of us, God forbid, fell ill, you know, because we knew that we have to expect that one of us is going to go down with this at some point. We can't fool ourselves that we're just going to get through this without anything. We hope we will. Yeah. But if we do, we want to know that our patients will be taken care of, our clinics will be taken care of. And so knowing that my direct team, the physicians I work with, the clinic staff, the APCs, the nurse practitioners, the physician assistants, we all have each other's backs. You know, if somebody, one of us got sick, we're supportive. Okay, we'll cover for you until you get back. So that feeling is, it's good to know that, you know, everything won't just fall apart as soon as if I have to go out for 2-3 weeks, something like that. And then knowing that if we have any concerns, if we need anything in terms of PPE, in terms of time off, in terms of whatever reimbursement hits we could be taking in terms of, you know, all of us as providers, knowing that our administration has our back in that regard, knowing that we're insulated to a good degree from all those worries. So we don't have to worry about all that because we know somebody else is worrying for us. Because if we worried about every single aspect of this disease in one individual, we'd probably have a nervous breakdown. So that's why we relegated our worries, so to speak. So you worry about this aspect, make sure we all have enough PPE. You worry about this aspect, make sure that, you know, everybody's is financially taken care of. I'll worry about this aspect in terms of what are we doing for, you know, the best scientific modalities to treat our patients. So knowing that we've all relegated duties to each other as a team is huge, because without that, I don't think we could be getting through this. We wouldn't be where we are right now.
Makes
like you're saying.
Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Sorry, just to piggyback on that real quick. Did you learn anything new personally or professionally about teams, your team specifically? Is there a silver lining that you would have never learned or found out about or anything like that with the team, that you guys are just more cohesive or anything like that?
Well, I always knew that my team would have my back, but I realized it more now. You know, when it was never tested, I never needed to actually you know, when I started work a long time ago, we would do this test where you have to close your eyes and fall backwards and hope your team catches you, you know, and just kind of trust them. I always knew they would, but I never thought I had to test it. And this is the first time I did. And everybody, you know, came through on that. And so what I have to answer your question, what have I learned? I've learned that I can trust my team. I can trust my superiors. I can trust the people that I've never even met, you know, I can trust everybody that they are working very hard. Many people who are far smarter than I am working very, very hard to come up with solutions to get through this together. So the value of teamwork, I've realized it a lot more through all this.
Great comfort. Thanks.
You created quite an image, Dr. Hussein, of one gigantic trust fall. I hadn't thought of the coronavirus prompting that amongst all of us, but it's a really, really good analogy. I want to go back to something you said earlier in terms of, the collective worry if you tried to put it all on your own shoulders would literally make you crazy, right? You can't take yourself there. There's been a lot in the news just about self-care amidst all of this, and it certainly plays a role in resilience. So how are you staying sane? You're in the throes of this every day. What are you doing to maintain your self-care?
Well, the first thing is the first goal of the day for me, it's little goals. I set little goals. The first goal of the day in the morning is getting out of bed. So dealing with that fear every day, knowing that, okay, so today is, I got to get out of bed. Is this the day I get it? But then you have to overcome that little fear and tell yourself that, well, I didn't sign up for this job to not deal with fear. So it's not an option, like I mentioned earlier. And then also the optimism and the collective faith that we have in science. That's how I kind of slowly get through my day, knowing that, okay, somebody out there is working on a solution and we are all part of the solution. That gets me through my day when I see my colleagues, when I see my coworkers, everybody, and I look at them and I think, what the whole world is probably calling the end of times, the greatest disaster ever known, we call Tuesday, so we are, this is life. We didn't sign up for this knowing that it's all going to be a bed of roses. We knew we were going to have to deal with some things. We just, it wasn't something that we didn't think we'd have to deal with, like, probably now, but it was going to happen. So that's how I get through my day. I talk with my coworkers. We laugh together. We share a cup of coffee together, maintaining distancing. That's how we get. And then when I come home, I have my family. I have my kids. I turn off for that 1 or 2 hours. My kids don't know what is going on. They don't care. And for that maybe 1 or 2 hours, I don't know and I don't care either. I'm going to sit with them. I'm going to watch a Disney movie. I'm going to watch Frozen. I don't want to hear what's happening on social media. I don't want to hear the bipartisan pandering. I don't want to hear anything about that. For the next 1 or 2 hours, it's just my time with my kids and just life as some degree of normalcy. And that's my optimism. That tells me that, okay, well, despite all the madness that's happening within the four walls of my home, things are back to normal. And that recharges my battery. And then, knowing that, Let's go to sleep tonight and wake up and do it all over again tomorrow.
So we all have to create our little island of peace is what I'm hearing from you as you described that.
That's exactly right. And whatever it takes, for some people, meditation works. And for me, it's my family and my friends and family really helps. My wife has been very supportive throughout all of this. And that's just how we're going to get through this.
Mm-hmm. We'll have to do a follow-up call on the Disney release of Mulan or Disney Plus release for how your critic review on that.
You have a lot more adult appeal than you would think, actually. The values.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Incredibles is a great movie. I love the Pixar's, yes.
Yeah. We'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors for making our time together today possible. Our premier sponsors are HGA Architects and Engineers and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Epstein Yoon Architects, Hall, Render, Killian, Heath & Lyman, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady. So you talked about how that whole feeling of, oh my goodness, this is the end of time, right? But this isn't the end of time. We eventually will get through this. And humor me a little bit, Dr. Hussein, and put yourself 10 years into the future, and you're in front of a medical school class. And what would you be saying to those medical students about what we've learned from this time?
Well, for one, I hope 10 years from now, this pandemic will be history. And it's something would be an interesting lesson for students to learn from. The first thing I would tell them is, one, don't be afraid to be afraid. Okay. You're human at the end of the day. Yes, you're a provider, you're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're whatever you are as a medical healthcare worker. But don't be afraid to be afraid, because it's, you know, and don't be afraid to be uncertain, and don't be afraid to be afraid of the uncertainty. You have to acknowledge the fact that you're human, and that's okay. Because some people can feel a little bit let down by their own humanity, and that should not be the case. That's one. Two, don't assume that life will not throw a curveball at you. So be prepared for the curveball. Be mentally prepared. Be physically prepared for any curveball that life may throw at you, and be ready for it. You know, so whatever you need to do for your own resilience. You know, there's no one size fits all for that. Whatever you had, I spoke about some of my means of dealing with it. I know others have dealt with it through physical exercise, meditation, whatnot, but be ready, be prepared, because everything may not be a bed of roses forever. Sometimes life may just throw a curveball at you and when you least expect it. And that's what we're going through now. The third thing I would say is have faith in the science. Have faith in, you know, that's what we do. We are, you know, at some level, we're all scientists. At some level, we rely on data. We read books. We go to conferences. We discuss with each other. Some of us could be wrong. Some of us could be right. But we're all analyzing things together. We're all trying to unravel things together. So have faith in the science. And, you know, most importantly, always be optimistic. You know, if you become pessimistic and start to despair, then you just cannot function. You can't get out of bed. You cannot do anything. You just have to always be optimistic that, you know, tomorrow's a better day. That's what we're striving for.
So you took us to the path of optimism, Dr. Hussein. Thank you for that. I think that's important for all of our resiliency. So on that vein, what's making you hopeful?
You know, we had talked about this affecting so many people on so many levels. And I know that there are people out there far, far smarter than I am, who are working on getting us through this. You know, we've heard a lot from experts like Dr. Fauci, about ways of how we're going to slowly mitigate our risks and get through this. So I am hopeful that collectively, if we have faith in the science, if we keep working, keep doing our due diligence, keep mitigating our risks, keep the disease numbers under control, that I'm hopeful that we can actually contain the disease, the risk, to a good extent. And we can, you know, hopefully eventually come up with, have a vaccine, have some tangible therapeutic options. And so that hope keeps me going as our degree of uncertainty decreases, as we learn more, along with our degree of uncertainty, hopefully our degree of fear will decrease. So I'm hopeful that all these measures will help us get through this. I'm hopeful that the science will come through in the end. We've dealt with it, with, you know, pandemics before. HIV was a pandemic. We've had flu pandemics. This is nothing like what we've, in my lifetime, at least, this is the worst we've had. But we will get through this if we are collectively smart, and we don't divide ourselves over our different views. If we just stick with the science and have faith in it, hopefully we will get through it.
So as a physician, you take a oath to heal. What has it meant for you personally to see patients go home, recover, and go home?
Well, that's the best part of it all. So our hospital setting, actually, we have a, every time a patient goes home, there's a little music that plays on the speakers. And every time we hear that, sometimes we hear it 3, 4, 5 times a day. And it's it just feels so uplifting that, another patient went home. And knowing that we may have played some part of it as physicians, as nurses, as nursing assistants, as any provider, we may have played some small or large part in them going home intact, alive, doing reasonably well. That just, there's no better feeling. I mean, we just feel amazing that, okay, take that, Corona. We sent another one home. Of course, there's a little bit of anxiety that knowing that I hope the patient stays home and they don't get, you know, sicker 2 or 3 weeks from now. But yeah, that's one of our, we live for that feeling that, you know, okay, they're getting better. The most important thing is we don't want patients to come to the hospital at all. We would prefer patients to not get sick enough that they need to be hospitalized. But when they do get hospitalized, we love for them to get better and go home. I did want to actually touch on, you know, and I see billboards all over the place about healthcare workers, how, you know, we're heroes and line up with the Avengers. And I can't speak for others, but let me tell you, I'm not Iron Man. Okay, I'm not Batman. We are not heroes. Okay, we were doing our jobs long before the pandemic started, and we will keep doing our jobs long after the pandemic is over. Sure, the spotlight is on us right now. We appreciate, you know, people calling us heroes, but we don't need billboards. You know, there's many other people who are probably greater heroes than we are. There's teachers, there's public servants, there's a lot of people doing a lot of great work. What we do need, we don't need a billboard. We don't need the flowers sent to us. We don't need anything. We don't need a half off to Cancun. We don't need that. We appreciate it, but we don't need it. What we do need, if you really want to respect us, is please listen to what we're asking you to do to mitigate your risk. Please don't become one of our patients. You know, please don't let your partisan views or any sort of view put you at any kind of risk. You know, please listen to the experts of what they're saying. That's all we're requesting, is to respect what we're telling you. Please stay safe and do whatever it takes to keep yourself and your family healthy. That's how you can respect us. We don't need anything else. We don't need a billboard. We don't need to be called heroes. We're just regular people doing our jobs.
My gut reaction to that is, I think that's exactly what a hero would say. Otherwise, you're probably a villain.
What's that? Say that again, sorry.
I just said, I think that's probably what a hero would say. I'm not a hero. I'm just doing my job. But I think my perspective, for what it's worth, I think it's similar. I mean, I'm not on the front lines or anything, and most of my work is supporting providers and healthcare workers to get patients to the care that they need. But I get comments a lot about similarly. You know, thank you so much for working in healthcare at this time. And it's, well, what's the other option? If I go home, somebody else is going to have to do the job, and they may not have the experience that I have. I've been fortunate enough to work through the, you know, the short period of time through COVID. Somebody else comes in, they're going to have a crash course that's even shorter than what I had.
So another part of our resiliency and our optimism, I think, is the fact that we've been given an opportunity to help. You know, and that's a huge responsibility on us. And, you know, the fact that we have been given a skill set, and when I say we, I mean all healthcare providers who are on the front lines and who are not on the front lines, have been put in a position with the skill set, a degree of amount of experience to actually help in some way, shape, or form. You know, not everybody's contribution is as obvious as somebody else's. You know, maybe a physician's contribution might seem very obvious, but there's somebody else working behind the scenes whose contribution might be just as important, as you mentioned, who may not get as many accolades and recognition, and that's where the whole team aspect comes in. So there are people on my team, I would say, that I don't even know them. You know, there are people working behind the scenes, and that's the beauty of it all. That's where we all collaborate and come together.
Yeah.
I think another way of building on what you just said, Dr. Hussein, is you talked earlier about, resilience is like taking the day step by step and getting out of bed in the morning. And to what you just said, we all have an opportunity to help, and we all have someone counting on us to get out of bed in the morning. And that in and of itself, in the midst of fear, I hope is a powerful motivator. Someone's counting on us, and we're counting on each other.
Absolutely.
To get out of bed.
I actually love the fact that you said that, because there was a poetry that I remember that it was in a different language, but I'll try to translate it in English. And it goes, how can I ever say I'm tired? God knows how many people are relying on me to not be tired. So, I mean, I can't say I'm scared. I can't say I'm tired. I can't say I've had enough, because yes, this last 6 months has really worn down. I mean, a day doesn't go by where I say, God, just enough. You know, we need a break. But I mean, it's really, really worn down on all of us. But again, the way fear is not an option, fatigue is not an option either. You know, I can't say I'm tired, because there's somebody out there who is relying on me to not be tired, relying on everyone else as well. So that's, I fully agree with that. That's an absolutely great comment.
This makes me think about in my work with access to care stuff, what I do there is I work with providers one-on-one, or as a system, I look at how our patients are actually interacting with the healthcare system, and I try to find out ways to improve their ability to actually get in to see their provider or to get into the hospital. And one of the things that we run into a lot when we're working with providers one-on-one, looking at their practice, for example, is burnout. They say, well, I've got a panel of 4,500 patients. I can't possibly see them all. And they get so concerned with all the KPIs, the key performance indicators that we're putting in front of them that are supposed to mean access to care, or supposed to mean quality care, or supposed to mean whatever it is, that they forget about why they came here in the first place. And I think that drives a lot of that burnout. And when we can take a moment, when I'm working with these providers, we take that moment to remind them, you chose healthcare because you wanted to help people, or remind them whatever it was, that whatever the impetus was that pushed them in this direction, it reinvigorates them. And I think that's kind of maybe unnecessarily what we're getting here, and what I'm kind of hearing from you a little bit, is that whether we wanted to or not, this is kind of a big wake-up call and a big reminder that I chose healthcare because I wanted to help people. And now I'm getting that chance. And it's kind of like the universe saying, well, you wanted it. Do you really want it? And it's a test of our commitment to our patient outcomes, to our own self-care, and how we balance all of that together.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for. You might get it.
Yeah.
We wanted a challenge. We like you said, we signed up for it, and we came into this because out of passion to treat patients, to help people, and we are getting that chance right now, and then some. So this is we should look at the positives, and we should feel that this is a great opportunity. And someday, you know, we talked about 10 years from now, how things will be. Well, someday, hopefully, we'll look back at this kind of being talked about in textbooks and on documentaries on TV, and we can say, you know, at some level, I was part of that, and at some level, I think I played my little role in helping us get through that.
Dr. Hussein, you talked about trust earlier. I think there's that change from theoretical to experiential. When we're talking about trust specifically, I was fortunate enough, just a little story. When my wife and I first got married, we thought it was a good idea to get scuba certified. And so we went and got our advanced scuba certification. So, I mean, just in the spirit of trust, I mean, it's easy to say, you know, I love my wife. I trust her with my life. It's another matter entirely when you're 65 feet beneath the surface of water.
and your error is down, and you have to come up with some way to communicate to her or her to you that I'm in trouble. You have to go from theoretical trust to experiential trust really quickly. Can you talk about maybe an experience that you had that's similar? Maybe because you talked about that jump, but can you give maybe an example, a specific example of when that kind of trigger hit for you and your team?
And that Brian had kind of asked about, you know, some things we've learned and experienced through this, and I had kind of touched on how this experience has made us actually go from knowing that we have a team that we can fall back on to actually experiencing and realizing that we do. So some of the trust aspect, the experiential level that you're mentioning, came from the preparedness that we have, came from the contingency measures that we took, came from the cooperation that we had. We didn't really hit too many roadblocks as such, you know, because we didn't come across too many situations, thankfully, where we would hear before that, you know, maybe a year or 2 years ago when everything was great, that, oh, yes, trust your team. And then when it came time to actually trust your team for everyone to play a role, nobody was stepping up to the plate. Thankfully, we didn't have too many of those. So that was my experiential level that, okay, so when it actually comes down to it, when we're actually in the midst of it, when the war has begun, we can actually, everybody can rely on each other to step up to the plate in whatever role they are. You know, like we said, everybody's playing a different role. Just procurement of PPE, for example, you know, make sure that somebody's out there, ensuring that we have enough PPE to protect ourselves, because we obviously cannot do our job without enough PPE. And it hasn't been easy. There's been a nationwide shortage, as I'm sure everybody knows. So doing that, making sure that there's a smooth flow to our clinic processes. So we have, you know, managers there, we have staff there ensuring that, making sure that we have enough medication supply, therapeutics, you know, whatever, whether it's convalescent plasma or other modalities to treat patients, ensuring that we have access to those. So honestly, I haven't experienced too many situations, and testing was the other one. We didn't have testing. That was a big hindrance to the care that we were providing, a hurdle. And so knowing that there are people working tirelessly, you know, like we said earlier, fatigue is not an option here, to ensure that all this is happening smoothly. And when I saw all these things actually coming together, I realized, okay, we can rely on each other. You know, we are in this together, and we are truly working towards making each other's lives better. And as a physician, that's very comforting. I need to know that, you know, that there's a team working behind me. You know, I don't want to have this, and like I said earlier, have this feeling that it's all me and nothing else. I need to know that behind me, there's people working behind the scenes to make my job easier. And I have experienced that. So yes, I can't really relate to scuba diving. I haven't been that low in the water. My wife doesn't know how to swim, but but I can, in this experience I have had, is yes, it's been a great experience in general, that everybody has come together really well.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, Dr. Hussein, this has been a great coffee with you, a virtual coffee with you, in terms of our ability to talk with you today. And I just wanted to take a few minutes to recap some of what I heard. But there was a lot to hear, so I apologize if I don't hit on everything. We talked early on about how uncertainty is a challenge and fear is relentless. And in the midst of this pandemic, we're kind of getting the dynamic duo of uncertainty and fear. And resilience is kind of how we get through it. And you talked about how to deal with the uncertainty. We really need to focus on taking one day at a time. That's always seemed to be good advice, but that advice has taken on new importance to all of us now. And then in terms of fear, we talked about it from a number of perspectives. Fear is not an option. Fatigue is not an option. But the other thing that really, really hit me is we can either have fear divide us or we can have fear bind us by helping us learn empathy for each other, because we are all feeling fearful together. And just the importance of us having fear be something that brings us together in a positive way and in a way where we're working for each other as a team to get through this. And if we do that, that whole slogan of we're in this together takes on a very different meaning. And I think that's what I heard you ask for. Let's really be in this together in terms of listening and making decisions to keep each other and all of us safe. And then finally, you know, because our topic is resiliency, I feel like I need to bring back to a smaller point you made, but a very important point for us as healthcare executives or anyone listening to this podcast, and that is that spreading the worry is part of keeping a team resilient, that none of us should be trying to literally wear that superhero cape alone. And that the more we can think about that as we live our lives in the midst of all this uncertainty and fear, the better off we'll be. And to do that, we have to be optimistic and hopeful. And if we are, we will get through this together. Well,
one quote that just came to mind was that quote by Benjamin Franklin, Janet, just to kind of reemphasize something you said, where, you know, they were, all the founding fathers were together, and they had just committed treason against the crown. And he said, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we shall all hang separately. And I just think that's exactly the scenario we're in. Mm-hmm. If I just go home and I'm just done, like, what value am I bringing? I'm taking value away, and my risk doesn't change. In fact, it might go up.
Doctor Hussain, you don't call yourself a hero. That's fine. We all believe you're a hero, but I will say you can't deny that us calling you a humble leader, and I believe your organization is better for it. And I'm in your community, and I thank you for making our community safer and healthier. And I appreciate you sharing vulnerabilities and being honest and having this conversation with us today. So thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for very kind words. It's a pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the discussion we had today.
I'll just echo what Brian said. Dr. Hussain, it's a pleasure to be part of this experience with the college, to be able to do something a little bit different. But it's kind of makes it all the more sweeter of an experience to be able to meet great people like you who are on the front lines, who are doing the work that that sometimes we forget about. You're not necessarily in a position right now that everyone's thinking about. Infectious disease isn't something that the common patient or the common individual in the community is considering. Wow, I wonder what the infectious disease docs are thinking right now. And a lot of patients don't even know that we have infectious disease docs. But your perspective on all of this has been really life-changing for me, and having been able to benefit from hearing your experiences, I'm very, very thankful to be here. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I guess it took a pandemic for us to get our 2 minutes of fame, so to speak.
who knew?
But yeah, who knew, right? We have television shows on ER docs and things, but we don't have any shows on infectious disease docs, and we probably never will. But that's not what we're in it for. But thank you for your kind words, Abraham. Appreciate that.
Dr. Hussain, I'd like to join Brian and Abraham in a sincere thank you both personally. You couldn't see it because we're on a podcast, but there were a couple of times as you spoke that I was teary-eyed by the humbleness you were expressing, and also just so grateful for your words, reminding people what our healthcare workers really need from us. And so you were very eloquent in that. And for that, we are very, very grateful as the American College of Healthcare Executives. And personally, as Brian and Ibrahim noted, for how much we can learn from each other, which is another great reminder in these times where there's a lot we need to be reminded of the good in today's world.
Thank you. And very, very, very kind words. Much, much appreciated. Thank you so much for this opportunity. It was a very, very wonderful discussion and an important one.
Well, Dr. Hussain, I hope very literally that you and your family remain well. And in my heart of hearts, I hope so much. I know that this year you were not able to go and see family in India, and that 2021 brings a return to that part of normal for you too.
Thank you. I hope everybody stays safe and be well.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye. So thank you again, Dr. Hussain, for being with us today. We appreciate how busy your days have been of late, and truly valued the wisdom you had to share.